The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
Brought to you by Standard Life. Retirement specialists getting you ready for your second life.
With me is Lise Han, journalist and co-host of the Think You Know the President's podcast, and Flor McCarthy, a journalist, author and co-host of the Think You Know the President's podcast. And part of the reason they are here, you may have guessed it at this point, is to talk presidential elections, because this one, we are told, is not the most exciting of all time. So we thought we'd look at the ones that were most exciting. And Flor, you were making the point there during the break, of the 15 presidents that we've had, a surprisingly large percentage have gotten in with no election.
Yeah, exactly. So this will be our 10th president. So we've had 9 presidents, but 15 presidencies, because of course some of them stayed in for second term. That would have been our second president, O'Kelly. Dev was in for 2 terms. It seems like longer. It seems sometimes that he was in for
like 6 centuries.
Paddy Higgins was in for 2 terms, and McAleese and Higgins. So quite a few of them were in for 2 terms.
But if I'm right, then other than death, there's only 2 who haven't done that. There's Douglas Hyde and Mary Robinson, the only 2. Isn't that right, who haven't
and,
done the
double? Well, Childers and O'Dowley both were in for only 1.5 years or so, because Childers was her only president to die in office, and Carole O'Dowley then resigned in a very dramatic moment. But yeah, quite a few of them have had a second term. And another interesting one there, Anton, is that of those 15 presidencies, so from 1938 all the way up to 1990, there was only ever either 1 or 2 candidates.
Yeah.
And then suddenly from 1990 on, we had 5 and 6 and 7.
Was that because of a change in anything to do with the rules or legislation? No. Or was it just mood?
It was the mood. I mean, up to and including Paddy Hillary, it was
sort of seen... It was just Fine Gael candidates against each other, was it?
And it was exactly, but it was more or less seen as a sort of a reward for politicians, you know, usually for default politicians. It was kind of a slight retirement hole feel off it. Now, one of the things we found as we did the podcast, the amount of them that were sort of had to be talked into it, because it was sort of seen as you went up to this dusty old house and you were rattling around with not much to do. But then along came the, you know, Mary Robinson. And that, of course, sort of changed everything, because that was the first of the really fiercely contested campaigns. I mean, the first modern campaign was probably Erskine Childers back in
now. How do you define modern campaign? What made it modern?
Well, he had a battle bus.
He had a bus, and they called it the Wanderley Wagon.
And it had faxes on it, and it had
and it had loudhailers.
Loudhailers and faxes, and it toured.
Did they have fax machines? I didn't know you had fax machines that were
back
mobile.
I knew they had fax machines,
but I thought it was like a telex in a big room. I didn't know you got it on a bus.
Well, you know, He described it brilliantly in a letter himself just after he won that election, and he wasn't supposed to win it. He was
a mad underdog.
Yeah, he was the underdog. But he says that it was a very modern campaign. The bus played Irish music, which people could hear. A loudspeaker was attached. Press and camera crews travelled in it. We drove 4,700 miles, stopped 650 times, and I made 250 speeches. The women became more and more enthusiastic. I was mobbed by young girls and women. One of them said to Rita, his wife, "Look after him, he's precious. I haven't been so moved since Elvis."
And I mean, let's face it, Elvis, he certainly wasn't. I mean, this was a sort of public, you know, an English-born public schoolboy with kind of a posh English accent and everything, you know.
250 speeches and some Kaylee music.
He knew, it's hard to beat it.
Do you know the most extraordinary thing about that campaign, Anton, was he was running against Tom O'Higgins. That was the only other candidate. And O'Higgins was the nephew of Kevin O'Higgins, who was the man who'd signed the death warrant for Childers' own father. And he said in this letter that the Irish press didn't pick up on it. The British press did, on that incredible coincidence.
Yeah. That's amazing.
Isn't it?
So if that's the first modern one, the first really contentious one was Mary Robinson's, wasn't it? Because that was when we had...
Mary Robinson
gave us mature recollection.
It did. I mean, Mary Robinson, yes, she...
Because Lenehan was meant to be home and host,
Lenehan,
wasn't he at the start?
Was the clear
anointed.
Runner. He was this guy, you know, he'd been decades in politics. He was a jolly, hail fellow well met, baby kissing, you know, avuncular guy. Everybody
Fianna
knew him.
Fowler.
Exactly. Loyal Fianna Fáil. He was miles, you know, he was the clear front runner. But then there was probably 2 things that really blew up his presidency. The first was the mature recollection, as you rightly say. This stems back to phone calls that were made to Ars Anuach Daran, to then President Paddy Hillary, back in 1982. Now, this was a particularly chaotic 81 and 82. We had three general elections between 1981 and 82. Right, there was, so I mean, it was a time of great turmoil. Calls had been made to Ars Anuach Daran, which were logged, and
we found the. And we actually,
you have the phone log. Okay, so look, come here, yeah. Let me have a peep there.
He loves an old document.
Did you fax them in on a bus?
So, yeah, exactly. It was from the battle bus. So, it basically, this came back up in the campaign that Lenihan was one of several Fianna Fáilers who had rung the Irish to try and get a hold of the president to stop him from granting dissolution of the Dáil to then Taoiseach Gairis Fitzgerald, and then the opposition could put together, led by, of course, Charles Haughey, could put together some form of government. Anyway, in a course of an interview, Lennon had given an interview to a young journalist, then journalist, researcher, political researcher, Jim Duffy, in which he had said that he had made these tapes. This came up in the course of the campaign. He went on the television and said, on his mature recollection, the interview he gave to Jim Duffy wasn't correct. And he hadn't been in touch with the Irish. And this,
because the suggestion was it was inappropriate interference with the president.
Exactly.
Massively.
They felt they could lean on a Fianna Fáil president.
To lean on the Fianna Fáil president. So this caused massive chaos. Long story short, it ended up with Charles Haughey sacking Lenihan from the cabinet, which led to massive unrest and displeasure within the, you know, within Fianna Fáil, and probably really hastened the demise of Charlie Haughey. So you had this. So Lenihan's
not the worst thing that Haughey did to Lenihan, it has to be
not
said.
Not absolutely by a long shot, Anton, you're absolutely right. But this did for Lenihan's credibility to a huge extent. But some of the grassroots Fianna Fáil began to rally behind him because he felt he was hard done by Charlie. So he was coming back nicely, you know, up the inside straight.
And then P. Flynn, Porrig Flynn minister, went on RTE Radio, and in the course of a debate about the election, he said something like, well, that woman, referring to Mary Robinson, has a newfound interest, a new hairdo, new clothes, and a newfound interest in her family.
And being a mother and all that kind of thing. I mean, it was absolutely...
The campaign blew up.
If you listen back to the audio, Anton, you are literally going, oh my God. And you can hear Michael McDougall, who was on the air with him as part of the panel, just going, now, hang on a minute, that's outrageous. And of course, the PDs were actually supporting Lenihan's campaign. I mean, the PDs had rolled in behind Lenihan, but McDougall was, so that, of course, they
now,
ran.
Now, the argument that Flynn then, I think, subsequently made was that he was saying that she was repositioning herself in terms of public profile.
But he was,
but that dog didn't hold.
Backpedaling for most.
I mean, and really, when you listen to it, he just, the hole keeps getting bigger and bigger.
Yeah.
You know, he did subsequently apologise, but that was it. Game over. It was the Manon Ahern were like, right, and absolutely, I'm off.
There's a beautiful postscript, by the way, because Bride Rosny, who was Mary Robinson's right-hand woman, sent 2 dozen red roses to P. Flynn the following day, saying, with thanks, Manon Ahern. She knew.
Yeah.
But that's an interesting recasting, because there's sort of an inherited sense that Mary Robinson was, by virtue of the previous work that she had done on things like the decriminalisation of homosexuality and all those kind of things, she was always the coming contender. But she effectively got it by the imploding of the Lenihan campaign.
And Lenihan still actually got the most first preference votes. But something like 85% of the transfers from the third candidate, the poor old forgotten Austin Curry, went to her, and she got over the line. But there is also an argument that, you know, she was picking up a huge amount of votes at the time anyway, because, you know, Manon really did like her. She was clearly an incredibly able candidate with a stellar record. So, you know, there is an argument that she probably would have got there on her own merit anyway without the help from P. Flynn.
So that was 1990. And that was the first of the multiple candidates, which brought us up to, I suppose, the other real exciting one then was the one, which one had Sean Gallagher in
2011.
It?
He was in twice, actually.
Yeah, but the first one was the really exciting one. That 2011 was
the one you call a bun fight, Lisa.
Bun fight. It was an absolute bun fight.
Bun fight at the Oris.
Yeah.
Who else was in there? Was that the one with David Norris and Dana?
It was Mary Davis. So she organised her the 2003 Special Olympics. There was Dana Rosemary Scallon, former MEP, and obviously Eurovision winner. Sean Gallagher, who was the entrepreneur and Dragon's Den member. Fine Gael's Gay Mitchell. Sinn Féin's Martin McGuinness. And David Norris, Senator David Norris, you know, senator and civil rights campaigner. So
what
seven
lineup, when you think
candidates.
About it.
It was, I had the great privilege, honour to cover that campaign, and it was like literally every day there was just some
drama.
Piece of drama and madness breaking out.
Remind us of some of it.
Well, some of them include Mary Davis. She got hit with accusations that she was running as an independent candidate, and then stories broke that she'd earned nearly 990,000 sitting on state boards, and it was accusations that she was been sort of funded by quangos and she wasn't an independent candidate. So, you know, she was sort of getting hit about, you know, her links to the government and state, and she was to be an independent candidate.
It got vicious to each one of them in turn.
Well, this was the first one of the ones where really you learned the lesson of, you put yourself up for presidency, you are going to get filleted.
Yeah, because it's not about policy, it's about who you are and what your beliefs are, because obviously in a general election it's
actually
about policy.
Sorry, hang on, I just actually, that, those, they were 2007, weren't they? Or they were the, that was the Higgins.
Well, 1997, the McAleese one was Mary Bonatti.
Oh yeah.
McAleese, Derek Nally, Aidy and
that's
Dana.
Right. That's right, yeah.
Yeah. And
but Higgins really, like he, in 2011, he, it's interesting because he just was so, he kept his head down. I've even forgot to mention him because he actually stayed invisible. And there was just this circular firing squad and the others were started taking each other out, you know. And, you know, a role was played, obviously, in that one. I mean,
but this has set a strategic precedent. I think Heather Humphreys is currently taking the same route.
I actually totally agree with you.
I do too.
Yeah.
Is she being ill-advised, advised to do
so? I mean, Sean Gallagher was the shocker because he suddenly turned into the front runner about, you know, in the middle of the campaign. People were buying into his message.
And of course, he was the first then to be impacted by social media with the famous
tweet.
Precisely.
And it was very... Yes, and that, of course, turned out to be an incorrect tweet. It was, you know... And
that just shows again, the volatility of these campaigns and how they can turn, doesn't it?
Just they can just turn. But that was an absolute...
Because Sean Gallagher was polling well at the time, wasn't he?
Sean Gallagher was flying it. And people were buying into his sort of entrepreneurship, and he was talking all about jobs, which, of course, has absolutely nothing to do with the presidency, but people were kind of buying into it. And then there was that famous frontline debate the week of the election, and there were all kinds of accusations were thrown at him. Martin McGuinness went on the attack against him, and there was all a kind of accusations that he was, you know, he had picked up, you know, checks on behalf of Fianna Fáil for, oh, I mean, it was, and then this mad tweet that purported to be from Sinn Féin, but really wasn't
at all.
No, it wasn't. It was read out on the air.
RTE didn't correct it while they were still on air
still
and
on.
Knew.
They didn't know it was a fake tweet at the time, because obviously this whole notion of social media being read out was really in its infancy. Like now you'd look at that tweet and the first thing you'd do before, you know, you check its authenticity.
Oh, you'd be holding it with a 40-foot prong.
It is a bit of a grey area, because some say that they actually did, by the end of the programme, they had discovered that it was a fake tweet but didn't correct it, allegedly.
I mean, I was actually out in RTE that night covering that, and it was completely and utterly crazy. I mean, it was, the atmosphere was just so febrile. Everybody was throwing accusations, contract accusations around. There was real kind of anger in the studio.
See, how do we get back to this? How do we get that to happen again for this one? Because there'd be no crack so far.
Well, I think it's also because there were seven candidates. I mean, there's sort of, it's sort of a three-horse race, isn't it, really, at the moment? It's like so sort of...
Was that a deliberate pun, or was that a Freudian slip?
Because it's pretty, you know, it is pretty dead. It is fairly dead at the moment.
And there's a few weeks to go, so, you know. Who knows what can happen?
Exactly, it could all kick off.
I mean, it could all kick off again, and we all live in hope, you know.
I should say, by the way, that Ivan Yates and Sean Defoe are back with their election podcast, Calling It, and they're going to be casting their eye over the 2025 presidential election. First episode is going to be available on Thursday, the 9th of October, on the Go Loud app or wherever you get your podcast. What's the actual polling day?
It's 24th.
It's the 20th. Yeah, it's the 24th. So, and I mean, of course, you know, the great thing about the podcast myself and Flora are doing is that people want to break from the campaign. At least, you know, we're providing fun and games, you know, going through each of the presidents between now and polling day. So
going through them, are we?
We're going through them for a shortcut.
Well, if you want to hear that, the podcast is Think You Know the Presidents, and the co-hosts, Flora McCarthy and Lise Hand. Guys, thank you very much for coming in.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.